Good evening. This is a meeting of the San Francisco Urban Forestry Council. The day is Tuesday, October 28th, 2016, and the time is 6:02 p.m. A reminder that the ringing and use of cell phones, pagers, and other similar sound-producing electronic devices are prohibited at this meeting. Please be advised that the chair may order the removal from the meeting room of any persons responsible for the ringing or use of a cell phone, pager, or other similar sound-producing electronic devices. There will be public comment on every item on the agenda, as well as a general public comment for items not on the agenda. And there are speaker cards there at the table. You can fill out if you'd like to speak during public comment. With that, item one, call to order and roll call. Chair Flanagan.
Present.
Vice Chair Short.
Here.
Member Crawford.
Here.
Member Hillen is excused. Member Hilson.
Here.
Member Kidda is excused. Member Lacan.
Here.
Member Lohman.
Yes, here.
Member Andrew Sullivan.
Here.
Member Michael Sullivan is excused. Member Taylor.
Here.
Member Carter is excused. Member Manzone is excused. Member Sway. And there's a quorum.
Great. I'd like to welcome Nick Crawford as our new member to the Urban Forest Council. Nick, do you want to say a couple things? And you do have to tell us your favorite tree.
Sure.
So you got to press the button.
Nicholas Crawford. I'm honored to be here and part of this group, so thank you very much. I'm a mayoral appointee for as a professional arborist, and I work for the Davy Tree Expert Company. And in my spare time, I like to volunteer with FUF and get engaged in heated tree conversations. And my favorite tree is the ginkgo. I value both the male and female, but as a street tree, certainly the male, if you want to play a prank on someone, the fruit's pretty great for that.
Thank you.
The next item is item two, adoption of minutes of the September 23rd, 2016 Urban Forestry Council regular meeting. The explanatory document is the September 23rd, 2016 draft minutes. This item is for discussion and action.
I move to approve.
A second.
So we have a motion by Member Hilson and a second by Member Lohman. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any public comment? There's no public comment. All those in favor of approving the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? The motion passes unanimously. Next item is item three, public comment. Members of the public may address the council on matters that are within the council's jurisdiction and are not on today's agenda. Looks like there's no public comment. We'll move on to item four. Item four is a presentation of Pacific Gas and Electric Pipeline Project. The Pacific Gas and Electric Company will present on a pipeline improvement project. The speakers are Darren Klein and Ramnik Saini. Public Affairs with Pacific Gas and Electric. This item is for discussion.
Good evening. I have a presentation that I'll be doing here, and I did have paper copies with you. As we go through things, we can get more specific with some of the trees that we will be talking about as we go through, but we're in the process of working with the city to come up with maps and the specific trees that I'll be talking about tonight. First, we would like to introduce the overall concept of what is the Community Pipeline Safety Initiative. And what I want to make sure that everybody understands that we're talking about this evening is we are talking about gas transmission lines that are large lines with high pressure. When you see a line that goes to your house, that's a service line. That's 1 or 2 pounds of pressure. Distribution lines that feed those service lines, those are 60 PSI or less, 60 pounds or less. Transmission lines are above 60. You're usually traditionally run above 100. They can be of a large size, but what we like to point out in public forums like this is that a lot of our transmission, the sizes can be from 2 inches to 42 inches. And here in San Francisco, it's roughly about 10 inches, and the pressures are significant. And here, and this is part of the reason why I gave you this, because it's a little hard to see this map, but this is the blue line on the lower right-hand side is where the gas pipeline transmission is. And it then steps down to distribution. So everything is south of Market and feeds distribution to the rest of the city. So what we are talking about this evening is gas transmission pipelines that are in the lower right-hand corner of the map. And we want to talk about what effect that has. Because, you know, in the last 5 years, we look at our gas transmission pipelines very differently. And so what we've been doing is we've been hydrostatic pressure testing those lines. You've been seeing a lot of PG&E walking over these lines on a regular basis. You've been seeing us doing internal pipe inspections where we put a little robot in and put it down the center of the pipe. It's like an MRI of the pipe, so we can test the thickness of it. We have been doing valve automation all over the place. We've got about 280 automated valves throughout our entire system. Our entire system is 6,750 miles of gas transmission pipeline. Part of the reason for that is California only can produce 10% of the natural gas that we need or that we use. So 90% of it comes from outside of the state. So we are bringing gas in from the Rocky Mountains, from Texas, Mexico, Canada, et cetera. So we have to have these large lines to be able to feed the system. Those valve automated valves go back to a 24-hour gas transmission center in San Ramon, where we monitor this 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's just like war games, right, with the screen set up, all of that other stuff. And we know, usually, when the pressure changes, that there's a problem with the pipe. And our number one problem is dig-ins, meaning somebody goes and decides to dig a hole for some reason and they tear into a pipe because they fail to call 811 before you dig. And we want to encourage everyone to call 811 before you dig. We leak survey the line on a regular basis. I want you to know that we have these things called Picaro cars. They look just like Google Map cars, except they're PG&E blue, and they drive around sniffing out gas. Increased our gas detection 99%. They're rather amazing. And we fly over the line every 5 weeks. Why? Because we run into people digging into our lines on a regular basis. We run into, and it's some wild stuff. I was actually in a helicopter flying over Berkeley when somebody pulled up with a backhoe and started ripping in 4 feet away from a gas transmission line. It led to a little bit of an exciting day because we started, you know, when you're flying with a helicopter in an urban area, everybody pokes their head out. And we just want people to know that we are out there patrolling the line, keeping it safe, and we don't want folks to be scared because we want to be very proactive. We don't want to be reactive. We want to be proactive. And that's what we're talking about today is being proactive because we have found a lot of vegetation over our lines. We found trees. We found brush. We found all of those things. And working with first responders, which first responders are fire and police who secure an area, but we also have first responders that go in and actually shut off the pipe in case of an emergency. And shutting off a gas pipeline in case of an emergency is not like our electric side of the business where you just turn off a switch. It is where it takes time to be able to do that. And we want to increase that response time. We want everybody to know that we could have done a better job with this. So we are here to replace trees. And when a tree does have to be replaced, we're here to work with you to figure out what that mitigation should be. And we want you to know that there are some trees that are able to stay near and around the pipe, and we want to have a little discussion about that as well. We also will let you know that trees that can stay, we'll be talking with our first responders, making sure that they know what's going on when it comes to what we refer to as the tree inventory. So what are we looking for in an ideal world? In an ideal world, this is what we would like. 5 feet on either side of the pipe, we would just like to have grass. Okay? In San Francisco, most of the pipe is in the street, so we would like to see grass next to that pipe within 5 feet. 5 to 10 feet, we're looking at shrubs, nothing with a woody consistency, and 10 feet and outside is when we would like to see trees, crepe myrtles. It's our concept of right tree, right place. And the issues that we see when it comes to this is not just, there's not just one issue that's a problem. It's issues that work in concert to create the issues that we have. One, if we have an emergency, do we have to dig through live tree roots to get to the pipe? That's one issue. Now, I mentioned that these are gas transmission pipes. When you talk about distribution and service, those can be made of plastic. Gas transmission pipes have to be made of steel. And we pack sand around them because we live in earthquake country. So it becomes a great place when you're putting gas through it, condensation on the pipes, attracts tree roots and other organic material, and when it hits the sand, it's a nice, great place to grow. So we're trying to keep the trees far enough away so we don't have some issues with tree roots and corrosion on the pipes, as well as being able to get to the pipes. Now, guys, if we did this, this would be clear-cutting trees. And that's not what we're about, and that's not what we're here to talk about. We don't have to have this clear swath, because I was talking about an ideal world, and we don't live in an ideal world. So we came up with a process to be able to determine if a tree that's within 14 feet is, what is that risk? It's called the integrity management risk, and it's all of those things that I just mentioned. Is it a risk of tree roots? Is it a risk for us to have first responder access? Is it a risk, a lightning risk? Is there soil instability? And we've come up with a tree-by-tree review process where we can say there are trees that are manageable. They can live within 14 feet of the pipe for their entire lifetimes. And that's how we set up our integrity management system, is so that the tree can live a long, happy, healthy life. When it passes away, we would hope that we could move it about 5 feet outside. There are trees that are an unacceptable risk. And those trees, we have been working with the city to review those trees. So when I showed you this right here, probably the first question in your mind is, okay, so how many trees are within 14 feet of a gas transmission line in here in San Francisco? The number is roughly 400 trees. Now, I say roughly because of inventory issues that we've been working out. What I do know when it comes to street trees, there are 387 manageable trees. There are 29 unacceptable trees. So we're talking a dramatic number of these trees are staying, okay? On private property, there are 29 trees. Okay, so those are street trees that I was talking about. On private property, there are 29 private property trees. It's on roughly 10 to 12 properties, depending on how you define the ownership. Those trees on private property are all manageable. They're all within 10 feet of a property line because the transmission line is in the street. And what we'd like to do is talk to folks on private property and say, hey, your tree's manageable. We want you to keep the tree. City will keep the tree. We're going to come back year after year to make sure that the tree is still alive and it is still safe. But you can keep those trees. So really where we see the risk of trees and vegetation is the 39 unacceptable trees that are street trees. Okay? Now, if anybody, you know, we talk about tree replacement and restoration. This is our responsibility is how we see it. We could have done a better job of letting people know. I'm sure there's some people here saying, hey, I called 811 to plant a tree, and I'm about to find out it's still close to a gas transmission line. And we may have some of those instances. What we decided to do as a company is have shareholder funds be available to do restoration and replacement. What that means is, when you've seen our electrical folks come through and do some work, that's under ratepayer funds. That's CPUC mandated or Public Service Commission, for you folks listening at home. The Public Service Commission mandates what can be spent when it comes to that kind of work. We realized for us to get the trees where they need to be so that we can all work together, we want to take on that responsibility. So we're using shareholder profits to pay for this program and make sure that we have these replacement and restoration. So as we look at locations, for example, on 25th Street here, there are, was it four trees here along the block? And we have two or three blocks like this. When our arborist went out with your staff arborist to look at this, we realized that there are some cases where in the existing, you'll see those trees there, it doesn't look like we can find a tree that's compatible. Now, we're more than willing to come in and look at doing boxes with plants and stuff like this and figuring out what kind of landscape can work here in an urban environment, and then replace the tree somewhere else nearby so that you're not losing any tree canopy. And it's ideas like that that we don't want to lose sight of as we do this work. Another big area of impact is the Phelps Street. And what we have going on here is there are trees that are unacceptable, a couple of London planes, etc. But we realize, as we look at this, that we could do some low-lying stuff along the front and then put larger trees behind. And we're looking at the inventory there and looking at space and saying we could put a couple trees back there, and then along the front here we could put in landscaping like this. Plug into existing irrigation. We do have trees right around the corner with a project that we've been working on that we can tie into and keep the area beautiful and restore it. So not only are we saying that we're going to provide trees, but we are looking at restoration of those areas as we work with them. The area of biggest impact is San Bruno Avenue. This here, the trees that are in tree wells along the curb are very close to the pipeline, in some cases directly over. But there is room to do restoration, to plant more trees that are on the other side of the sidewalk, and to work with the community to figure out what we can do to bring this area back and do a full restoration, all at PG&E's cost. Now, what I've pointed out here are the kind of major areas that we see as issues where we'd want to put in some time, work with the committee to figure out what is the proper mitigation when it comes to things like this. And we also want to make sure that you understand the 39 trees that are unacceptable, why are they unacceptable, how are they unacceptable, et cetera. With that being said, I do want to bring up a couple things that you may have heard around our program, because like I said, we've been doing this throughout our entire system, and there are some cities that haven't been happy. If you Google this program, you'll see Walnut Creek was not happy. You will see that there are some other cities that were not happy. One of their biggest concerns was the environment, and we do have full environmental reviews of everything. We are not exempt from CEQA. Some people have made some statements that we're exempt from CEQA. These projects that we do are not exempt from CEQA. We will go through that process. If CEQA, it is a discretionary action, so as we go through and figure out, you know, sometimes it is warranted, sometimes it's not. Our lead agency is usually a state agency, right? So it would be with Cal Fish and Wildlife and a waterway. It would be, you know, what I'm trying to tell you is anything that we have to do environmentally usually happens at the state level, but we're here to tell you we're going to keep you informed of everything that's going on. We do full environmental reviews. We do nesting birds, all of those kinds of things. We also, you'll hear people say that PG&E does not have to adhere to discretionary tree permits here in San Francisco. And what we're saying is, yes, we are subject to CPUC, we're under their jurisdiction, but we have opened up our shareholder funds so that we can work with you and live to the spirit of your discretionary permit. And we're not here to, you know, we want to go through the whole process, whatever it takes, whatever outreach that needs to be done, all of those kinds of things, because we're talking about trees. Trees are a very emotional issue. And I know San Francisco is trying to plant a lot of trees here, and we want to be part of that process as we go forward. And what we've learned from our prior experience is that we need to have a robust outreach program. So what we've done is, on top of mailing letters to people that are going on and to also living up to the spirit of your tree ordinance, because a lot of tree ordinance have you mail letters and do public outreach and that kind of stuff. But we have Emily Sloan here with us today and Sarah Wetter. These are people that will actually answer the phone when somebody has an issue. Okay. They are assigned to San Francisco, and they will actually go door to door around where the trees are. You will see that our approach is very different than the way we have been in the past. It is different. We will knock on doors. We will talk to folks. If somebody has a tree in front of their house and that tree has to be replaced, we'll make sure that they're part of that discussion. If we can put a tree in their backyard, if that's possible, we'll do that. We'll do anything we can to mitigate with them, as well as mitigating with the city with the loss of tree canopy and those kinds of things. We realize that this is going to take time. It doesn't have to be done next month, right? And I say that because there's a lot of times that you see us come in and say, this is an immediate emergency, we've got to take a tree, and we're going to explain it to you later. We have time over the next year to be able to have these discussions, come to an agreement on mitigation, and start the replacement of trees over time, right, so that everybody understands what we're doing, why we're doing it, and they can ask questions about the process and what goes into our thinking. So with that, we have Ramnik here, who is our public affairs representative for here in San Francisco that you can always call, as well as myself. I work pretty much the whole territory. And we do that to have somebody like me so that I can tell you what worked in San Luis Obispo. You know, it's not going to work here in San Francisco. It's a different environment. But we want to make sure everybody is treated consistently and that the right thing is done in the right place. So I'm here to let you know how it's worked throughout the system, where we've kind of built some experience. And if you have any questions, please feel free to ask.
Not working. Just speak.
Oh,
there it goes.
Thank you, Meg Lowen. That was a lovely presentation. And I'm a lover of trees, but I know we need gas, and I appreciate your clean energy portfolio. I guess my big question is, what is the density of this pipeline? I mean, how much percentage of land are we looking at? Are we looking at 95% of landowners or 1%?
No.
Are we at, and how can we monitor what might go ahead if we approve these kind of things?
Well, when it comes to private landowners, we don't see an impact because all of the trees are manageable. And we want to go and give them a similar presentation to this so that they understand what it means to live next to a gas pipeline and that this is why we're going to be checking the trees as things go on. The number of private property folks that live along the line that have vegetation is 42 property owners. Okay, that's our overall number of people that have vegetation. The other property owners have no vegetation near the line because the pipe is usually in the street. And they don't have any trees in their front yard, or they don't have a front yard because, like as you saw on 25th, they may not have tree wells there. So the impact to private property is very minimal here, and that's why I said earlier, you know, we want to just talk to the 10 people we know have trees, let them know they're manageable, and we're working with the city, and because we are informing everybody all over the place, all over San Mateo County. We're in Marin, we're in Alameda. I mean, we're everywhere around the area. And there are some people that have said, hey, do I even live on a gas transmission line? And the number of people that live on a gas transmission line is very small. And one of the things I have here is where it says for more information, and you can view an online map of our natural gas transmission pipeline at pgne.com/pipeline locations. And you can type in your address, and you can see how close you live to a gas transmission pipeline. And you'll find 99% of folks don't, you know, would not even kind of show up. But there are those folks, and there are still a lot of folks, though. It is a gas transmission pipeline. But it is not everywhere in San Francisco, and it is in a very limited area that we can work with folks. And that's our intention, is to work with them in a better way as we move forward.
And it's not a Pandora's box, so to speak.
No. The gas transmission line is not growing. It's right where it is, and I don't see that us putting in any more pipe in the future. That we do have the infrastructure that we need to feed the city, but that pipe will live a lifetime. You know, it'll live for a long time, and we want to make sure as it lives its life under the ground that it stays as safe as possible.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks for your presentation. Mm-hmm. I had just a couple of questions, one of which you just answered, which is there going to be an expansion of the transmission line, even with the growing population in San Francisco as we go more vertical? Are these transmission lines sufficient?
Yeah. The transmission lines bring the gas into the area, and then it gets to a step-down station that then goes into distribution. I would see that we may have to have the actual pipes that are existing, you know, depending on what their pressures would be, you know, let me answer your question this way. Our gas transmission pipeline system, all 6,750 miles, was built with the intent of delivering gas and storing gas. It has 4 days worth of gas in that pipeline system. And so we don't see a need where if you started adding buildings, we would just be increasing pressure in certain places and it would not be here. We also store gas out in San Joaquin County, and so if there are immediate needs or greater needs, we can. Right now, we're pretty sure we can use the infrastructure we have to deliver enough gas as San Francisco grows vertical.
Okay. The other question you mentioned, so a couple of things, I guess. Mm-hmm. when we're looking at 25th Street, so you're saying that there are four existing trees and there will be no ability to replace trees on that corridor?
That's what it looks like. There's one tree on the ends, and that's where I would want to defer to your local person, that your city arborist, Chris, that looked at it, and our arborist is also name is Chris. So I don't want to get too confused here, but they've been looking at that location, and it does look like we're not going to be able to put trees back in there, but that's still a discussion that we've been having. It looks like there was one tree that was recently planted there that is manageable, and I'm hoping that, you know, we can work something out with that location. I just wanted to show here that we will go to the expense if we have to do planter boxes and stuff like that if we are faced with a situation where we can't replace a tree.
And then who bears the long-term maintenance cost of those planter boxes and even the short-term maintenance cost? I mean, in terms of establishing new plantings, and a tree that's been established doesn't require any supplemental irrigation. A tree that's newly planted is going to require at least 3 to 5 years of supplemental irrigation. So is PG&E going to cover
those? That's part of the mitigation discussion that we would have and want to work something out. We've been also teaming up with a lot of nonprofits to work on the maintenance issues. For example, in San Jose, our city forest has said, hey, why don't, you know, we give us an opportunity to help you with those issues. And then they've been using that to actually go out and get greater grants and grow their organization. And we hope that there are some other organizations here in San Francisco that would like to work with us and work out a way that we can be able to do those kinds of maintenance. But it's our intent to cover the costs and figure out what is the best way to do that with the community and with the most community involvement.
Okay, my last comment is just that you mentioned crepe myrtle, which is probably not our first choice for most street trees.
Oh, no, I wouldn't put a crepe myrtle in here. I just, the picture that they make me use has a crepe myrtle at 10 feet, so I figure I'd just call it out. I'll just call it what it is. I'll own it, you know.
Okay.
I've already been made fun of for that, so thank you for doubling down, Carla.
That's what I'm here for.
Rose?
So thank you for the presentation. This is roughly the same presentation you gave at the Planning and Funding Committee. So a couple of questions and comments. What I'm still not seeing is some sort of a universal commitment to some kind of firm at least or fixed or minimum replacement policy. So this is actually, the 25th Street is a good example. That's just loss of canopy.
Yes, and that's why our commitment has always been that we will not replace a tree until we have an agreement on mitigation. I had mentioned that in the previous meeting, and that's where I wanted to have that assurance that we can sit down, have the conversation, say this is the mitigation that is expected for this neighborhood, this is what the neighborhood would expect, this is what our community would expect, and we wouldn't go ahead with any work or replacing of any trees until that mitigation is in place. So this is the beginning of a discussion right now. That's what the purpose of this is letting the community know what we're doing, why we're doing it, and what is the best way to work together.
Right. I appreciate that, and maybe this is too early to ask this question, but it's, you know, I'm looking at what you're proposing. What you're proposing is a removal. Where is the mitigation?
What we're proposing is replacing trees and trying to figure out where those trees should go if they can't go in that place. So when you take the San Bruno example, right, we have on San Bruno Avenue, the trees are right along the curb. So we've been having our arborist and your city staff talk about what would work for replacements, coming up with a plan that I'm assuming that you would approve as this committee, although I don't know exactly how that would work, but it would come up with a plan that we could all agree to, and then we would do that plan as we replace the trees.
Okay. Maybe other committee council members have more information than I do, so I'll defer. I'm simply pointing out that what is shown is removal.
Right.
And not, right, you've got each tree marked. Each tree that's being removed is marked.
Okay.
That's as far as we got here. Maybe I'm misunderstanding.
No, I think that these were set as examples of looking at where trees would be and what would have to be replaced and what you would do to replace that. So when you look at, and I'm not sure what's Okay, what happened? Okay, so what we had said might be a recommended replacement, so on this one right here, there are two dots there that show where replacement trees could go. Okay?
Okay.
That is shown right here. So we show that there are some abilities for replacements, and these plans were put together talking with just one city staff member to say, okay, what could work for replacements around where these locations are.
Okay.
So it's to start the discussion to be able to say that we are looking at these locations. I don't know what all of these exact locations are, but we're going to figure that out here over the next few months.
Okay. I don't want to sort of go on. But
I get your point. I mean, there's not a strict formula because we found that every city is different. So for me to show up and say we're going to give you 5 15-gallon trees and replacement for one tree, we're trying to stay away from a strict formula and trying to figure out what works for the community.
So if I could just chime in, there is a strict formula.
Yeah.
Which we've discussed, which is the Public Works Code does require a replacement tree for any tree that's removed in the public right-of-way. So PG&E is aware of this, and if we can't replace a tree at the same location or in a nearby location, then we would either work with PG&E to replace a tree nearby, or they would pay an in-lieu fee, and we would use that funding to replace a tree somewhere else in the community. And we would obviously be looking for places that are relatively nearby where a tree is removed. So I did just want to clarify that point.
Yes,
the other thing, just for the record, since it came up in the hearing, that PG&E doesn't believe that they're subject to the city's discretionary permitting process, but the city disputes that. And they're in this particular group, they're all agreeing they're going to abide by our permitting process, so it's not an issue. But for the record, we think they are obligated to follow that process, which they're following anyway.
Yeah, no, I mean, to let you know what the reason why I said that was that there are some newspaper articles out there and stuff like that, and I wanted you to know that we are adhering to the tree permit so that if you had heard things from Walnut Creek and other places that, you know, Walnut Creek right now, we're replacing trees under an agreement that took us months to figure out, which we figure will happen here, and we figure the same exact thing is going to happen here. So I hope that gives you a little more, a better feeling.
Am I on? There we go. So to be clear, you're just coming in here to talk to explain that there's a start of a process.
Mm-hmm.
That process is really now taking place between PG&E and the city.
Yes.
At some future date, you're going to be coming back to us with a proposal that the city and you, PG&E, have come up with, and then you'll be making that proposal to us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just want to be clear about that.
Yes, sir.
And then one of the things I'm interested in is if you can't a question, if you can't replace a tree in place, would you be willing to, it sounds like you could do a sidewalk garden there.
I believe, whatever the possibilities, there are a lot of possibilities.
I see the pictures.
There. No, that's what, I'm saying there are a lot of possibilities there.
Okay.
Yes.
And that's going to be part of the conversation you have with the city.
Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Number one, again.
Hi, this is Rose. I'm just wondering, what was the impetus to start this process?
Well, we've had a lot of issues with our gas transmission pipelines, San Bruno being one of those, and we wanted to be very proactive, not just reactive in how we did things with the line. So 5 years ago, as we were looking at everything that we were doing, and we started doing more of the hydrostatic pressure testing, we started doing all of these different things, we realized that vegetation was a concern. A long time ago, we used to tell people to plant trees over the pipe because we thought it prevented dig-ins. It actually increased the number of dig-ins, and then we started having problems with corrosion and issues with trees and vegetation around the pipe. So we started our process, it was about 4 years ago now, where we went and figured out exactly where our gas transmission line is, GPS inline surveyed. We took an inventory of every tree that's within 14 feet of the pipe and all 6,750 miles of it, and then we started meeting with every community to discuss what the risk is and what it means to live with that. And we're here, as we've been working through all of the communities, we're here now to talk about the risk that's associated with those trees within 14 feet.
Okay, thanks. And last question, and I think the answer to this is no, but there are no current landmark trees near any of these transmission gas lines, right?
No, yeah. I probably would have led with that.
Nick here. Two questions. Are the pipelines marked above ground? Are there?
There are pipeline markers. In an urban environment, you'll see yellow medallions on the ground. You may see also pipeline markers in certain places, which are they're paddle markers. And they'll be, and you'll see that in some of the areas. I'm trying to remember where we have them here, because we have some, we have a few here that we can pull out some pictures of those for you.
Okay. Because I've seen the ones that are fiberglass or something,
yeah,
usually in roadside areas.
Yeah, those are the paddle markers. But then in urban environments, we use these yellow discs that are on the street and stuff like that. And then, of course, before you dig, call 811. We come out and mark the line.
Sure.
With a yellow paint.
And what about tree protection during emergency repairs? I've seen with electrical outages, if there's an underground failure of some kind, maybe it was cut and you're identifying where that happened, you might temporarily string wires above ground until something gets fixed. What happens with a gas pipeline if there were damage you needed to repair it? What's your approach, and would it affect adjacent trees and things like that as you're
repairing? It depends on the situation. I mean, if we have time to deal with a gas leak issue, if it's not what's called a grade one, if we have time to deal with that, then we come and work with the city and say these are it's a lower grade leak. But if it's a grade one leak that we have to stop within 20 minutes, we will do whatever we need to do to keep everyone safe. And that's our number one concern. You know, the issues that you're talking about, you know, we can have a longer discussion about because that really does get into the realm of what kind of accidents could happen, stuff like that. In this case, we'll protect any tree, you know, with the work that we're doing to proactively.
Well, is part of this a proactive approach, so you don't have a large tree over pipelines that if you had to excavate that immediately, the tree wouldn't collapse as you're undermining?
Well, we do have some trees that are directly over the pipeline that we are concerned about. They are unacceptable. If there was an emergency and we had to remove that tree immediately, yes, we would have to bring in a tree crew to remove that tree. It would probably take about a day. That's one of our concerns, is emergency access to the pipeline. And we don't want to have to put a tree crew in harm's way while they're trying to get the pipeline safe. And it really increases our emergency response time.
But for the most part, they're in the street, so it seems.
But they're
less
not
likely.
Always in the street.
But in San Francisco?
In San Francisco, good percentages, but they're not all in the streets. That's part of the problem, is that they're not all in the streets. I think that, you know, if we had if we had better planners 100 years ago that knew exactly where everybody wanted to live, we probably wouldn't be here having this discussion right now. But there are, you know, when you look at where the location of the pipe is, trying to get to certain locations for industrial applications, et cetera, it's not always in the most ideal place.
I mean, another question may not be totally germane, but what is the average life of your pipeline?
It depends.
And how old is the existing pipeline?
The pipeline here, I can get you all of that pipeline information. We don't always say that in public forums, but I can get that through our gas operation system.
Okay.
So that you'll know all of those and, like, the operating pressure, et cetera, which we can share with government. The pipeline, I can't tell you what that life would be of a pipeline. Our engineers, some say 100 years, some say 200 years.
Okay.
But the concept is really, as this pipe lives its life, right, we know that when it gets replaced, which eventually at some point sections of it will get replaced, and there's nowhere else really for the pipe to go in an urban environment like this. So the CPUC would most likely say to us, replace it right in place.
Uh-huh.
And so as we replace segments of pipe, that lifetime of that pipe could be a couple hundred years before somebody would say, let's do a wholesale move or this, that, or the other. But you know, the pipelines here, you know, I can assure you are less than 100 years old.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Any further questions?
Seeing none, is there a public comment? Seeing no public comment, we'll move on to the next item.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
The next item is item 5, committee reports. This item is for discussion. The first report is from the Planning and Funding Committee.
Okay, here we go. Nothing super exciting to report. I think we will have a special meeting.
November 8th.
November 8th, thank you.
On Election Day?
I'm sorry?
Election Day? That's Election Day, FYI.
Well, we tried. So we already, I think, moved. Yeah, that is the Election Day, but we already sort of moved it, I thought, once. So, well okay, we can look
meeting
into
meeting of
it.
The committee.
Planning and Funding
Committee.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's at 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't see a problem.
Okay.
I am. It's
Election Day. No, yeah.
Alerting.
Everyone's supposed to vote early and often.
Often.
Is it going to be a problem? I'll be there. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, we can maybe have our intrepid staff think about it a bit more. But yeah, as far as I'm concerned, we're
yeah.
fine. And yeah, beyond that, PG&E had presented to the Planning and Funding Committee what 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So this was sort of a repeat for us. And if I can, I guess I have the mic, so I can say it. Wasn't any more informative now, and it certainly wasn't any better now than what they had presented previously, but so it goes. That's all for me.
All right, the next presentation is the Landmark Tree Ad Hoc Committee Chair's Report.
And the chair is excused today, so I'll give a report on his behalf. The committee looked at a landmark tree nomination that we have on deck. It's a redwood tree at 4 Montclair Terrace, which is right in the middle of the curvy part of Lombard Street, if you're curious. This tree will be heard at the next UFC meeting on December 9th. The committee unanimously supported it. I was
going to
give that update.
All right. Is there any public comment on this side? There is no public. The next item is item 6, staff report. This item is for discussion.
All right. So Rose's motion at me about the flow chart. I haven't had a chance to work on it yet, but we have talked to our graphic designer, started talking with him about it. The flow chart is a process flow chart to describe the landmark tree nomination and evaluation process of nominations. The committee asked for it to become an administrative item for staff to handle. I haven't had a chance to work on it because I got a giant public records request, but it is top of our list to work on. We're hoping to have that online in the next, month or two, but keep asking questions about it if you would like. Additionally, for the Landmark Tree Program, we submitted a mini-grant to PG&E. I think I reported on that last month. We haven't heard back yet, but as soon as we do, we're going to start the design process with the stamp working with Public Works for landmark tree markers. We're also starting to look for an intern at SFE to start working on the biographies of the landmark trees to go along with the markers so that people can look up and find more information about them. So a lot of landmark tree work is in process right now. Final thing is at the committee, they asked for some kind of searchable database so we can more easily look up information about trees. So I started working on that as well. We have at the upcoming special hearing at Planning and Funding, I'm not sure if the Natural Resource Management Plan is going to be heard. It was called the SNRAMP. It's now called the National Resource Management Plan. So Lisa Wayne will be presenting on that. And the plan is also to hear at the December 9th UFC hearing. Also, at the upcoming hearing, we've got the landmark tree nomination and Titus six-month update and Geary BRT. So please, everybody, plan for a lengthier meeting on December 9th. It's going to be a big one. We, for other projects, there's the street tree list review that we need to get started. So if you're interested in working on that, let me know, and I'll send that out to you. We have a joint program, SFE does, with Friends of the Urban Forest. We're getting ready to kick off the Green Christmas project. That's going to be up. Trees will be able to be ordered in the next couple of weeks, and we're planning a big press event and planting with Friends of the Urban Forest on November 12th, I believe. So if you're interested, let me know. It's a lot of fun to participate in. The final project is we're going to be looking at design and replacement tree guidelines from other cities. The Planning and Funding Committee has mentioned that other cities use different replacement guidelines, like basal trunk area, things like that, for tree replacement. So I'm trying to start working on research for that to give you guys a report sometime, probably in the spring. So let me know if you have any input or questions about that. And that is it.
I got a question. Will the homeowner be able to be present on December 9th?
For yes. She has said that she can be there after all. I guess she had travel plans that she changed.
Good. Okay.
Make a comment?
Yes.
I just have a comment for the street tree review. Mm-hmm. The Department of Public Health is interested in participating. They have expressed some concern that deciduous trees, when the leaves gather in catch basins, can become mosquito breeding grounds, and with Zika virus concerns, they'd like to be involved. Yep. Oh. No joke. With our street tree recommendations. So I will send you the contact information mailing, but I thought I would mention that to the council.
Have they talked to PUC at all? Do you know?
Yes.
Okay.
So, yeah. If that's the case, yeah, we should maybe have somebody come here and have them articulate their concerns, because public health tends to trump everything else.
Yeah, they've suggested they may want to impose permitting requirements or, yeah, it's an interesting perspective.
It's an interesting perspective, and I'd love to get their vector biologist to explain their logic.
Yeah. So I told them we'd invite them to the committee or whatever, the committee hearings to discuss the street tree list.
Yeah. I mean, I might. Sort of frustration with these kinds of ideas stems perhaps from this PG&E meeting. You know, you notice there wasn't a single engineer there. There wasn't a single arborist there. They showed a picture of a block with four tiny trees. That's what's impeding access to the gas pipeline in that block? Those four, really? I'm not a gas transmission engineer, but that just did not seem sensical to me, let's put it that way. So if we're now going to face city agencies with some interesting ideas of what influences vector biology, it'd be good to have somebody who, you know, can actually explain the logic.
So this item usually comes before the committee and then the council in January. So we have a little bit of time to work with them and hopefully get some feedback before it comes back to the full council.
Which committee handles that?
Planning and funding.
Planning and funding.
Just because Zika has to do with water holes, which don't have a whole lot to do with trees, except in a few cases. I mean, I'd love to see us talk a little bit about Lyme disease, which is a much more serious issue for Californians than Zika. And if we're going to talk about health and trees, let's bring it on, but let's make sure we're being fair.
As someone who recently was diagnosed with Lyme disease, I'm with you on that. No, I think it's an important discussion, and they went from my perspective 0 to 60 on this, like suggesting that there are going to be
no deciduous
trees in San Francisco, and yeah,
you know,
I think we
so
need some
discussion.
It's so
politicized, it's pathetic, and it's an embarrassment to the science community, to be honest.
Okay, always something.
Any other comments or questions about my staff report?
Would it help to have someone speak to the benefits of leaves and catch basins from a stormwater management perspective, how it impedes water entering into drains, and we can use streets as inexpensive stormwater holding areas? Or is that a perspective to balance with this?
Nicholas, are you volunteering part of the street tree?
I'm not qualified to speak to that topic, but I'd be interested to invite someone.
Okay. Well,
I think let's take this one at a time. Let's actually give them the list, invite them to the Planning and Funding Committee, and see what their issues are, and get it on the record.
Okay. Well, we'll see if we can get them at the November hearing in advance of the January.
That day that we're all voting.
Yes.
All right.
Sure.
Okay. Thank you.
Some of us are going to be celebrating, hopefully, that evening.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Okay.
There's no public in the room, so we'll move on to the next item, which is chair's announcements. The chair of the Urban Forestry Council, this item is for discussion.
No announcement.
There is no public in the room, so we'll move on to the next item. Item 8, Urban Forestry Council member announcements. This item is for discussion.
I just wanted to say that we had a successful, the Planning Department and Friends of the Urban Forest built a pop-up forest on Market and 6th Streets for the Market Street Prototyping Festival the first week of October, so it was up for 3 days, and we created a little immersive native plant and tree installation on that corner that garnered a lot of attention and interest, and folks wanted it to stay permanent. So I just want to thank Friends of the Urban Forest for collaborating on that success.
It was fun. Any other announcements? It can be a record meeting.
There's no public in the room, so we'll move on to the next item. Item 9 is new business, future agenda items. This item is for discussion.
I think we have all of our future agenda items already discussed.
All right. There is no public in the room, so we'll move on to item 10, adjournment. The time is 6:54.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.